Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Had a good Tuesday, everybody. It is DiPietro, Canty, Rothenberg with you right here on 98.7 ESPN. Chris, just to show you how confused I am, even more so than usual, as we were listening to the opening of the show right there, I thought there was a pretty good chance it was going to go, hey, it's Friday, because I have really absolutely no idea what day of the week it is.
Come on, Dave. You know we were just back off of the weekend yesterday.
Yeah, no, I know.
You know it's Tuesday.
I did. I felt like I knew that, and then when I heard the open, I was like, wait, is it going to do the hey, it's Friday? I was like, no, it's probably not. It could be Friday. I was not 100% sure, but I am 100% sure now that it is, in fact, Tuesday, 9 days away from the NFL draft, which honestly I cannot wait for more so than usual.
Well, that's all that really matters, right, Dave? I mean, we're in the season of hope right now. And I know it's a lot of things going on. We're dealing with this pandemic. There's been a lot of negative news, but the one thing that we can be optimistic about in the sports world is that we do have the NFL draft in a little over a week left. We got Mel Kiper's new mock draft fresh off the presses today. Joe Judge, we're supposed to hear from, I believe it is tomorrow, and then Dave Gettleman on Friday. So there's a lot going on in the world of football, and it's huge implications for the local teams.
It sure is. And good morning, Rick. How are you?
Good morning, David. And I couldn't agree with you more, so I came up with something. You might like this. So instead of TGIF, thank God it's Friday, since every day feels like Friday and there really is no weekend, I'm going to go with this one. I'm going to try to sell this today. TGIS. You ready for it? Can you guess what TGIS is?
Thank God it's
sunny. When you got two kids, thank God it's sunny. Because
yesterday you can get outside today.
Yesterday was a battle.
Yeah.
Battle. I mean, we just ran out of activities. I was doing scavenger hunts or playing Uno, go fish. I mean, you name it, we did it yesterday.
Any of the child's games are on the table, huh? Well, I got yelled at yesterday because Ben says to me, you think we can go outside? I said, no, it's supposed to be miserable all day, so we can't. So then at like 6 o'clock, all of a sudden there's a break and it gets much nicer out. And he goes, you lied to me. I said, what did I do? He says, you said it was going to be miserable all day and now it's sunny and it's turned nice out. I'm like, yeah, yes, that I've lied to you. That was my master plan all along. So yeah, we got outside for a couple of minutes at least yesterday.
Yeah, you'll take whatever time you get. I mean, I was almost – Ella at one point said, can we go splash around in the puddles? And I was at the point where I was like, I was considering it. Well, if that's what you want to do, we can go do it.
Yeah, it's come to that. Can we go splash around in the puddles? And you give it real thought. Like, yeah, you know what? Maybe that is not a horrible idea. All right, so, Chris, you mentioned it. Mel Kiper's – what is it? Mock draft 3.0? Is this
4.0?
4.0, right?
4.0.
Now, is this it, or do we get another one next week right before the draft?
I think we get another one from both him and McShay right before the draft next week.
Oh, this is very exciting. Yeah. All right, so why don't we run through it? And obviously, we got to get into the Christian McCaffrey signing, which I mean, just has dollar signs flashing in front of me when it comes to one Saquon Barkley. And you got to imagine that Barkley's going to want to get paid after next season. But
we also got to get into Don LaGreca being on Golic and Wingo this morning.
The fact that he was on, or the fact of what he said?
No, what he said during the Golic and Wingo mock draft. I think it's conversation worthy.
I have not heard what he said.
So okay, we'll get into it.
We'll get into that in a couple of minutes as well. So here we go, Rick. Round one, pick one. No surprise to anybody, Cincinnati Bengals would take Joe Burrow. Second selection, maybe the most talented player in the draft to the Redskins, is Chase Young out of the Ohio State University. Lions going Jeff Okudah. Now, he doesn't account for trades, correct? This is solely you have your selection and you make that pick, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, doesn't account for trades, but what also you got to remember, too, as you go through this draft, is this isn't necessarily how Mel Kiper has the players ranked.
This is where he thinks they're going to go.
Exactly right. Like, he thinks Tua is the second best quarterback in the draft, but as you continue on the list, you'll see why I'm telling you that.
Yeah. So he has Okudah going number 3 to the Lions, Isaiah Simmons number 4 to the Giants. And let's just read the blurb about one Isaiah Simmons, a linebacker out of Clemson. The Giants should take an offensive tackle with one of their first two picks, but I wouldn't pass on Simmons, who has rare athleticism and versatility. Stick him at outside linebacker and let him chase down ball carriers, rush the passer, and cover tight ends. Simmons never has to leave the field. New coach Joe Judge will love him. So you hear that, Chris, and we'll run through more of the first round in a moment. You still are on the side of offensive linemen, correct?
Yeah, I'm still on the side of offensive linemen just because I know what drafting Isaiah Simmons means for the defensive side of the ball. Clearly, he's a playmaker, and he gives new defensive coordinator Patrick Graham a lot of different options. But in terms of your overall philosophy and your base defensive scheme, you'd have to change the work that Dave Gettleman has done the last couple of years and the personnel that he's put on that side of the ball. So to me, if the Giants decide they're going to draft Isaiah Simmons, that means they're shifting from an odd front defense, from a 34 look to a 4-3 defense, because that's the only way I see Simmons fitting on an every down basis.
Here's the other thing, though, too, I think you need to take into account, Dave, is what just happened with Christian McCaffrey. So you spent the second overall pick on Saquon Barkley.
Right.
And you can't, I mean, you can't argue how talented the kid is. But if you're going to pay him after next season, 16, maybe 17
yeah,
million
17,
bucks a year.
17 is a starting point.
Okay, so 17 million bucks a year. I'm going to want $17 million worth of production. And that's why I'm taking, Isaiah Simmons is great. I'm taking a tackle with the fourth overall pick. I need to make sure my offensive line is solidified. Because if I'm paying $17 million for a running back, he better be giving me, I mean, what Christian McCaffrey is consistently given the Carolina Panthers.
Yep. Yeah. No, I tend to agree with that. And whatever tackle you have highest rated is the one I think you go with if you're the Giants. Now, Dolphins at 5, Justin Herbert, which is interesting because we've heard forever, and Mike Tannenbaum's going to join us right at the top of the 11 o'clock hour today. We've heard forever that the Dolphins love Tua, and we're 9 days out, and Mel Kiper Jr. right now, Rick, has the Dolphins going with one Justin Herbert, quarterback out of Oregon.
Yeah, and I mean, it wasn't just Mel. I mean, Laura Rutledge also mentioned that she's hearing that, you know, the Dolphins may be more with, they don't question how talented Tua is. They question the durability, and they feel like Justin Herbert is the safer pick. I just feel like, I mean, with the upside of Tua, you know, having watched Tua and gone through some of his stuff leading up to the draft, I think he has the higher ceiling. And if for some reason he falls in your lap at 5, especially, because people are saying his ceiling is the left-handed Drew Brees, and you saw how not passing Drew Brees on his physical turned out for Miami, I would be hard-pressed. I think if I'm the Dolphins, I would probably lean towards taking the risk and taking Tua with the fifth overall pick.
It's a hell of a risk. I guess I look at it from the standpoint of, you know, past performance being the best indicator for future performance, and the one thing that we've seen from Tua is that when he's healthy and available, he's a top-tier quarterback talent, but how often is that going to happen? When he's dealt with the amount of injuries that he had out in Alabama, I mean, it's a question mark as to whether his game will translate in him being able to protect himself at the next level when you're talking about defenders being bigger, faster, more explosive. I would be hesitant with Tua, especially if you're looking for stability and you're looking to find your next quarterback for, you know, a dozen years. I just feel like, with Justin Herbert, yeah, the upside might not necessarily be there, but the floor might be a little higher just from the health standpoint. So it just depends on your risk tolerance. And based on what the Miami Dolphins have been doing, the moves that Brian Flores and Chris Greer have been making, it seems like they're more risk adverse.
Yeah, I just feel like Tua has so much more juice than Justin Herbert. I think Justin Herbert's a good quarterback. I just feel like Tua's got more juice. I mean, I think as far as, you know, his leadership qualities, which was one of the reasons I think that a lot of people have questioned Justin Herbert, more of an introvert. I'll tell you what, I mean, when you start looking at the quarterbacks that have had success and some of the best quarterbacks in the NFL today, I mean, there were questions leading to the draft and Deshaun Watson. Could he stay healthy? I mean, he's coming off, you know, ACL at Clemson. I mean, let's not forget this too. I mean, you're what?
He actually stayed healthy an entire season and won a national championship. You actually saw that at Clemson. We never saw that with Tua healthy for an entire year, and that year concluding with him winning the national championship. He stepped in that national championship a couple of years ago against Georgia, but we never saw him for an entire season and postseason.
Yeah, but you never saw Carson Wentz stay healthy, I mean, since high school.
And Carson Wentz has had some injuries with the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, but if you ask the Philadelphia Eagles, would they still draft Carson Wentz? They would 100% still draft Carson
Wentz. I'm not saying that they shouldn't still draft Carson Wentz, because, I mean, listen, they won a Super Bowl in the Carson Wentz era of Eagles football, but Carson Wentz wasn't the guy that was holding the Lombardi Trophy up for him. It ended up being Nick Foles. It just was that confluence of events where they had a capable backup after they had already locked up home field advantage throughout. I guess I'm just saying this. If you're an upstart program like the Miami Dolphins are, you're looking for something solid to build your foundation on. And right now, Tua comes with a whole lot of questions. So, yeah, Justin Herbert doesn't have the upside that Tua Tagovailoa has, but Justin Herbert is still a really talented college quarterback that has a huge amount of potential. Remember, Justin Herbert would have been a top 10 pick last year if he came out of the draft. So, I mean, it's not that Justin Herbert doesn't have talent, because we've seen that, whether it was at Oregon in the Rose Bowl, we saw it during the Senior Bowl, you saw it at the Combine. He's a really talented thrower of the football.
Yeah, I don't disagree with what you're saying. I don't think he has the same kind of you know, transformative generational talent that Tua has. Like, Tua's potential definitely is higher than Justin Herbert's. I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. I mean, if all of a sudden now you're sitting at five and Tua, because of what happened and we're dealing with the pandemic and everything else, is sitting there at five, I would be hard pressed not to take Tua. I mean, there are things you can't control. Yeah, you don't like the fact that he's had being between the two ankles and now the hip. I mean, his inability to protect himself, that would scare me too. But, I mean, there are things that happen in the National Football League. I mean, you always say it. I mean, there's 100% injury risk playing in the NFL. I mean, the greatest quarterback that we've seen recently is Patrick Mahomes. Won an MVP in his second year and just won the Super Bowl. He was a quarter of an inch away from, I mean, he had dislocated it. Let's not forget, he already was dealing with an ankle. He dislocated his kneecap. And luckily for him, I mean, he's what, a centimeter, quarter of an inch, whatever it is, away from completely destroying his knee? I mean, there are things that it's a physical game. I mean, I listen, you might be right. I'm just saying, if it's me and I'm Miami and I don't have to trade up to three to get him and Tua is sitting there at five, I would probably take the risk and draft Tua.
Well, you know, I think it will be a moot point because I don't think Tua will be there at five. I absolutely believe that there is a team that will trade into the top five in order to draft Tua Tagovailoa. And that's actually a part of my hot take that I'm supposed to be delivering tomorrow, but I'm going to go ahead and give a little teaser out there for it right now because we're talking about it.
Wow. Look at that. Teasing the hot take a day in advance. All right. So Herbert 5 to the Dolphins, Chargers 6. They probably run up to the podium or they scream to the Zoom and tell Roger Goodell they want Tua at 6. Derek Brown to the Panthers at 7. Tristan Wirfs be a good selection for the Cardinals at 8. That would be the top offensive lineman off the board, right? Would be 8 in Mel's mock? That's unbelievable. Jaguars would go Jerry Jeudy 9. Browns go Becton 10. And your Jets, Rick, and I think you would absolutely adore this pick, would go Jedrick Wills, offensive lineman, Alabama at 11.
Yeah, I would love the pick, too. And I mean, that kind of makes it an easier decision, I think, for Joe Douglas. I mean, if all of a sudden Jerry Jeudy's off the board at 9 and he's your number one rated wide receiver and Jedrick Wills is sitting there at 11, I mean, and you made a promise to Sam Darnold's parents that you'd protect him, I mean, yeah, you're taking Jedrick Wills with that 11th pick.
I mean, if you're the Jets, you feel really good about 4 defensive players going in the top 10 because that means that those offensive linemen are getting pushed down to you. And if the Jets
come out, and 3 quarterbacks.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It means the offensive linemen are getting pushed down to you. We know that there are probably going to be 3 quarterbacks that go in the top 10. But if you're talking about 4 defensive players, that means that there's a good chance that you're going to have a chance to get one of those 4 top offensive tackle prospects. And to me, the best of the bunch seems to be Wills and Wirfs. And if you end up coming out of this draft with one of those guys, Joe Douglas and Sam Darnold have to feel pretty damn good about it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you wind up with one of the elite offensive linemen in this draft and you're the Jets, you have to be ecstatic about it. Really. I mean, because then you've kind of changed the complexion of this team by adding the legitimate offensive lineman. Now, continuing along into the second round, and the phone lines are open, 800-919-3776.
Oh, by the way, quickly, Dave, though, I mean, this is, and I know you've scoured through the first round of this draft.
Yeah, yeah.
Couple things that if these picks are made, would scare me a bit if I was a Giants fan. How about the Philadelphia Eagles getting Henry Ruggs with the 21st pick?
Yeah, it'd be terrifying.
That's exactly what they need, too. A speed receiver? I mean, forget it. And how about this for the NFL? If the San Francisco 49ers end up with CeeDee Lamb with the 13th overall pick?
But they're going to wind up with Lamb or Judy. You got to figure, no?
That's scary.
At an absolute minimum for the Niners, they're going to wind up with Lamb, Judy, or Ruggs. At a worst-case scenario, they're going to add an elite wide receiver to that offense.
To go along with Deebo Samuel and George Kittle.
George Kittle. And a running game that was almost unstoppable in the postseason last year.
That's a good-looking team.
Yeah,
it is. Good-looking team.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
All right, go to the second round now. Terrific. Get me excited.
Patriots, they have taken Zach Bond from Wisconsin, the outside linebacker, which I've seen him taken in the second round, but Mel's got him going late towards the first. All right, so the 36th overall selection, which would be the Giants' second round pick, they would go Austin Jackson, offensive tackle from USC. Mel says, I wrote earlier the Giants needed to take an offensive tackle early, and Jackson could fall right into their lap at number 36. Played 1,680 straight snaps at left tackle for the Trojans over the last two seasons. Still a developmental project in my eyes. He'll take some time to adjust, but he could be New York's long-term starter at either tackle spot moving forward. So that would, if the Giants went Simmons and Jackson or Simmons and an offensive lineman of that ilk, Chris, would you feel awful about it, or would you be able to wrap your arms around something like that?
I think it'd be okay, Dave. The only thing with Jackson is I don't think he's a plug-and-play starter day one. I just don't see it. I mean, he struggled a little bit against A.J. Epenesa of Iowa in the Holiday Bowl. Epenesa had 2.5 sacks. So I look at Jackson and I say there's some growth that has to happen before he becomes a reliable NFL starter. Now, the Giants, as far as where they're at in their program building, they're just getting started. So taking an offensive tackle that he has huge upside, huge potential in the second round, I'm not going to kill him for it. But I would just prefer, based on what they did the last couple of years, the investment in Saquon Barkley, and then finding Daniel Jones with the 6th overall pick last year, you got to try to fortify that offensive line and get it to the point where it's solid sooner rather than later, because it's going to help you develop your younger players, most importantly, Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I don't mind. I mean, listen, it's not my favorite, but I mean, if Isaiah Simmons turns into the player that, you know, everyone is projecting, and you have someone that can make that kind of impact on your defense. Mm-hmm. I'm of the same opinion as Chris. I mean, if you can get a proven commodity at 4 at tackle and, I mean, help protect your young quarterback and Saquon Barkley, I think you're so much closer on the offensive side of the ball to having, I mean, I'm not going to say, you know, a great offense, but I mean, you're going to have a pretty good offense if you solidify that offensive line.
And I guess Gettleman had a conference call yesterday and really hammered home the offensive line point. And I guess a lot of beat reporters, I didn't hear the conference call, but I was reading the transcripts from it, seeing what the beat reporters were saying. They really seem to believe that the Giants are going to go with a center very early on in this draft. So if not second round, maybe with the third round pick that they actually do have. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw an offensive tackle and a center by the time we get through day two for the Giants, Chris.
I would love it, Dave. I mean, and there are some really good interior offensive linemen in this draft. I know you brought up the kid from Michigan. Was it Cesar Ruiz?
Yeah, I don't know that he's going to be there.
He won't be there, but I mean, Lloyd Cushenberry is a guy that was a starter for the LSU Tigers on that national championship team, can play guard or center, played really well down at the Senior Bowl. He's a guy that has good movement skills, but he's also really good at the point of attack in the run game. So maybe that's somebody that the Giants could be interested in. But, I mean, they've got to continue to try to build that offensive line because they've got to protect their investment in Daniel Jones. I mean, the Giants drafting Daniel Jones and hitting on that pick is like somebody buying a multi-million dollar house. Now it's up to the owners to get the homeowner's insurance. And to me, that's what solidifying the offensive line is. It's buying the insurance for, you know, the quarterback, the guy that's supposed to be the most important figure in your franchise. Right now, it should all be about trying to support Daniel Jones' development. And investing in your offensive line is going to go a long way to doing that.
Now, Rick, did you scroll down to 48 for your beloved New York Jets?
Yeah, I'm sitting here staring at it, Dave, and I love every second of it.
I mean, if you wind up,
I love this pick.
If you wind up with Wills and then Chase Claypool, the big, and he's a big kid, wide receiver out of Notre Dame, You would be having a party, I think. As much of a party as someone could have in this day and age.
I mean, you're talking about a kid who's 6'4", 240 pounds.
Yep.
That runs a 4.4 and jumps, 40 and a half inches. I mean, you talk about catch radius for Sam Darnold. I mean, yeah, if you get, you get Wills in the first round and then you turn around and get Chase Claypool in the second round, I mean, just further proof that Joe Douglas knows what the hell he's doing.
Yeah, that would be a tremendous first day plus if you're the New York Jets. And then you have the Giants' third round pick, which is like an extended second round pick. So it's
exactly
just all the
right
way for the Jets.
Yeah, I mean, the way that first of all he's handled free agency, sticking to his guns. I mean, no real splash signings, but I mean, he clearly, you know, had an idea of what he was trying to accomplish, solidifying the offensive line. He had, you know, a certain amount of money that he was going to spend for each player, and he stuck to his plan. And I love what he's done so far. And if you're a Jets fan and you look at this mock draft and you're not excited, you're crazy.
I think the best thing that Joe Douglas has done is maintain flexibility financially for future years. Like, he's not committing a lot of guaranteed dollars into 2021 and beyond. And I think that's the most important thing, because when you have flexibility, that means you can maximize your ability to take advantage of opportunities that come across your desk. And when you're at the point where the Jets are at, I don't think it's necessarily about going all in for 2020, but it's about, again, trying to build a solid foundation for your future and investing in the offensive line, getting Fant, getting Connor McGovern. I think it's a great place to start, but you got to start getting some impact players to put around Sam Darnold.
All right, let's get to the calls. 800-919-3776. You know where Mel has the Giants and the Jets going for the first two rounds, and let's go to the phone calls. Omar in East Brunswick. Omar, you're first up on a Tuesday, I'm told, on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing? I've been thinking about you guys every single day. I listen all the time. I just haven't been able to call in because of school. But, yeah, I love you guys a lot. I hope you guys stay really safe, you and your families.
Well, thank you, Omar, and same to you and yours.
So, I think the past couple of drafts, a lot of teams have gotten quarterback hungry. So I really think one of the top three tackles are going to fall to us, and we should definitely draft them. I don't understand the logic of drafting a receiver, because you see the Browns. Like, all you have to do is look at the Browns. Track star, but no good offensive line. And we need to protect Sam. That's, like, number one priority. I definitely agree with the Chase Claypool or, like, a Michael Pittman falling in the second round. And maybe in, like, the fifth round or fourth round, target, if you guys know him, Antonio Kennedy Golden. He's from Liberty. He's really good. And also, I want to know your guys' take on what Joe Klatt said about Sam Darnold.
I don't know what Joe Klatt said about Sam Darnold.
I don't want to say the wrong thing, but I know he said he was a better, like, I think it was either draft prospect or better player.
That was McShay. That was McShay.
That was McShay.
We played that clip, I think we played that clip yesterday from
Yeah,
Greeny.
It was yesterday. Greeny, yep.
Yeah, Greeny got a message from McShay. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was really interesting. But, like, he's true. He's really right, though. I mean, like, he hasn't had the right protection in his so far. Rick, I remember when we first talked about having Sam, about how the worst nightmare for us was our own team doing damage to him. And you're so right. Hopefully with Joe Douglas, things are changing already. He looks like he knows what to do. It looks like he knows what to do so far. But I'm really hoping it. The Jets have a good year. And also, no matter what, man, whenever I go to next season, I just can't get over the fact that our head coach is not liked. Like, he's just not liked, guys. You see, in Miami, nobody went to go play for him. And it's the same thing over here. And everybody's talking about giving him extra years and all that. I agree, in a sense. But he has not shown absolutely anything. Every game this year.
Omar, listen, and thanks for the call. We completely agree with you. And I haven't heard anybody talk about giving him extra years. And in fact, I've heard just the opposite, Chris, that this season is really big for Adam Gase, that if he doesn't win games and potentially get the Jets to the postseason, this is probably the last year for one Adam Gase.
Well, I mean, when he took the job, he said the Jets are going to control their playoff fate when they come to December. Now, it turned out that they only needed to wait to the end of October before their fate was sealed. But they did have a strong second half to 2019. Now it's about being able to build on that in 2020. And with the playoffs field expanding to seven teams, I think a lot of people would absolutely expect that Adam Gase would have this team in playoff contention. And I'm not saying that they got to get in, but they can't afford to have another losing season. I don't think you can afford to be done halfway through the year. I don't think Adam Gase can have a losing season. If Adam Gase has a losing season, I think he's on his way out.
Yeah, and I think bottom line for Sam Darnold, and I don't think, I guess I appreciate what Todd McShay texted to Greeny. Kind of makes me a little bit sad that he feels like he's got this much talent. I mean, you're going into year three. The kid needs some stability. Like, the revolving door of GMs and head coaches, enough is enough. I think Joe Douglas is good at what he does. And as much as I don't like Adam Gase, and I don't think the players really like Adam Gase, in all actuality, it's probably in Sam's best interest just to have the continuity that they find a way to make it work. And the Jets go out and win some football games this season.
I think that is in his best interest, but we don't know if Adam Gase is a good coach. Like, there's still a question mark as to whether or not Adam Gase is a good coach. And if the guy can't coach, then I'm not going to stay with him for stability's sake. I got to find somebody that can actually get the team to the point where we're consistently competing.
I understand what you're saying. But if all of a sudden, I mean, you can say he's not a great coach, and I would agree with you. But for some reason, Sam Darnold thinks he's a good coach, and for whatever it is, they make it work, and he gets the best out of Sam Darnold. Then that's the best case scenario.
Let's continue along. Let's go to Ira in Staten Island. Ira, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, good morning, Dave. Good morning, fellas. You know what? Listen, I'm leaving it up to Douglas. We've discussed it all winter. Receiver, offensive line, receiver, 1-2, whichever way he's going to go, I'm good with. The bottom line here is, you got four picks in the top 80 or 79. You got to come away with three starters. And listen, if he takes an offensive lineman in the first round, which I believe he probably should, as long as the grades are close, because you do have to protect Sam, they got to nail it with the receiver position. Nobody's talked about it. Do you realize, Jeremy Curley was a nice player, but that was 2011. The last time the Jets drafted a receiver that actually had any impact whatsoever, okay, Anunua was okay, but he could stay on the field, was Jericho Cotchery in the fourth round in 2004. That's 16 years they've gone without drafting an impact receiver. I think, I trust Douglas with the offensive linemen. They got to get a receiver that's going to be able to step in and make an impact right away.
You're forgetting about Stephen Hill, I think.
Oh, please.
Bad guy.
I haven't had my banana yet this morning. Stephen Hill, oh, my goodness. You can't. How about Devin Smith?
Another good one.
Ohio State. Another one. It's like bust after Chad Hansen, Darius Stewart. I mean, you could go on and on and on with the list. But I got to see them come away with a big-time receiver, whether it's first, second, or third round this year. They have to do it.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Ira. And the more I think about the Jets, I think you have to go offensive line and then wide receiver. I do. Because you're going to get a legitimate wide receiver in the second round. I mean, I'm looking at Mel's draft and, Claypool is there. And it's littered with wide receivers. And we've heard that this is the deepest draft. KJ Hamler is going at 50 here. And, there's so much talent at the receiving core, Rick. It just seems so obvious to me that you go offensive line in round one, and then you go wide receiver in round two.
Yeah, with the depth at that position. And by the way, Stephen Hill. To say Stephen Hill had hands like feet would be disrespectful of feet.
and nobody wants to disrespect the foot.
Yeah, you don't want to disrespect the foot. No, I couldn't agree with you more. I think as far as the tackle position is concerned, you look at probably four guys, and then there's a bit of a drop off as opposed to the wide receiver position where, Eric DaCosta in Baltimore said they could get a wide receiver in the fifth round that could step in and make an immediate impact.
Right. So if you can get a guy in the fifth round that can step in and get an immediate impact, what could you do in the second round? Right? You could get a legitimate wide receiver.
Yeah, you get Mom. You get a couple if you want a couple.
I think you need a couple.
I don't disagree with you. Number one priority, and I think you've seen this with Joe Douglas, is protect his young quarterback. Solidify that offensive line, and then build around that. Start to find pieces. Start to find weapons. Because Omar made actually pretty good a good point. It was as far as offensive talent is concerned, was there a better team than the Cleveland Browns last year offensively? Just talent?
No.
Okay, and Baker Mayfield had a bad season because his offensive line wasn't good.
It was garbage.
Exactly right.
Yeah, no, it was. All right, everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. What are they? You'd like to know. I have a list of them right in front of me. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, your nose, and your mouth. Stay home when you're sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN New York. Hey guys, some sad news. You know, every day it seems like we read one of these. This is apparently not affiliated at all with Corona, with COVID-19, and that is Hank Steinbrenner, George's oldest son, has passed away at the age of 63. Again, not related to the coronavirus at all, Rick, but certainly bad news. He was originally thought to be the one that was going to kind of take over for George, and obviously that's turned into Hal, but Hank passes away at the age of 63. The New York Post is reporting that right now. We don't have a ton of information about it, but I just wanted to bring that information to light because obviously another day and more sadness here.
Yeah, it's been a tough couple days, Dave. I mean, between this news now and then the passing of Karl Anthony Towns' mom, Jackie, and then you had, you know, Colby Cave in the NHL. I mean, 25 years old, he ends up passing away. I mean, it's just, every day it seems like, you know, you're having to read some of these really tragic stories.
It's been a tough year, man. It's just been a really tough year. And, you know, thoughts and prayers go out to the Steinbrenner family and everybody that's over there in the Bronx. Affiliated with the Yankees. I mean, it's a family business. They've got so many family members working within the organization. So clearly this is something that's gonna impact them. And, you know, you just hope the best for them right now as they have to deal with the loss of a loved one, man. It's not easy, man, but we talk about it all the time with this pandemic going on, man. It puts things into perspective and you realize that life is short, man. So again, we have more sad news going on, but it's a really sad day.
It really is. It really is. And our thoughts and prayers go out to everybody in the Steinbrenner family and in the extended Yankees family as well. All right, let's bring him in. I mean, not the way we wanted to bring him in, but still one of our favorites, and that is the wonderful and talented Mike Tenenbaum. Good morning, Mike. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, good to be with you guys and echo everyone's sentiments. You know, my thoughts and prayers to the entire Steinbrenner family, and that's obviously incredibly tragic and sad to hear.
Certainly is. All right, we will obviously as a show discuss this as we move forward, but we have you on and we want to talk about the draft, which is a week from this Thursday. So Mel comes out with Mock Draft 4.0. And this is kind of a question I ask you, but I think it probably changes as we move towards the draft. So I'll ask it again, and I'll probably ask you again next week leading up to, and that is, how realistic do you think it is that the Giants trade out of the number 4 pick and trade back into a, I don't know, a 5, 6, 7 range and still wind up with the offensive lineman?
Yeah, I definitely would. The more I've looked at it, Dave, I know your proclivities for the Giants, so I've been trying to do my Giant prep work the best I can here. So
so you take your Giants work more seriously knowing you're coming on this show, knowing the adoration I have for the franchise?
No question about it. As nice. I'm here to humbly serve the three of you, you know, I know it, you know, it begins and ends with, you know, between you and Chris's, you know, obviously pedigree there. So, but in all seriousness, I do think if I'm the Giants, knowing that there's a couple of quarterback needy teams between, you know, Miami and the Chargers sitting right behind you strategically, I think it lines up really well for them. I don't know why they wouldn't move back knowing that you could get an interesting pressure player in Derek Brown, you could get a versatile linebacker in Isaiah Simmons. You could get a much-needed offensive tackle. I mean, you're really dealing from a position of strength. If you could get one of those three players and add maybe a top 45 pick, I don't know why you wouldn't do that.
Yeah, but Mike, so let's just say, I mean, it always felt like the entire time until just recently that, you know, the Detroit Lions at 3 is when the draft would start. But now between Mel and some of the rumors surrounding, you know, the Dolphins' decision maybe to go with Justin Herbert. Is there a team that you can see outside of the Dolphins or the Chargers that would be most likely to move up to try to get a quarterback?
You know, I don't think you can rule out 9 in Jacksonville. You know, they obviously think they may have hit on Minshew, but, you know, they obviously traded away Nick Foles. And I don't know, that's something I would really keep an eye on. If they could be opportunistic and move up within reason, I think that's something that, you know, something definitely bears monitoring as we get closer.
Mike T, I know all the chatter pre-draft has been about Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa, but it seems like, you know, Justin Herbert is one of these late risers. I know he's been around. People were saying that he would have been a first-round draft pick had he come out last year. But in Mel Kiper's latest mock draft, he has Justin Herbert going before Tua Tagovailoa. Do you see that as a possible scenario when we get to the draft next Thursday?
I do. I just think this year it's the safer play. In 10 years, you know, that statement could look bad, and certainly I could be wrong, but just given the totality of the situation between, you know, a very unique hip injury for Tua, and Herbert really does check every box. I mean, we could sit here and scrutinize or you know, look at his body language or leadership. But to me, when I look at Justin Herbert's body of work, I've been on this for over a year now. I think he's a high floor, high ceiling player. And I don't know what Justin Herbert's missing that's going to prevent him from at least being a good starting NFL quarterback.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So injuries aside, because I think that's the thing that might sway me to Herbert, do you just like Herbert better regardless against Tua?
Boy, that's a hard question. It's closer for me than probably most people. The other concern I have about Tua is multiple surgeries, and he's not going to get faster. He's not going to get quicker. And will he get run down? You know, when you look at people like Johnny Manziel, you look at guys like Baker Mayfield, and what are their fatal flaws? To me, it's the lack of athleticism. Baker Mayfield isn't as fast as the more athletic defensive ends in our league. He can't outrun them. So when he tries to escape, it hurts his game. And I think for Tua, for him to be successful, it's going to have to be a lot like Drew Brees. You're going to need a center and two guards that are really, really strong, really stout, that could set a consistently firm pocket so he could step up into the pocket. So I do think Tua could be successful. I really do. But I think given everything, what I know right now, I would probably go with Herbert, certainly in the short term, because I think Tua, these are skill, not skill diminishing injuries, but certainly injuries that question his skill set and his ability to buy a second chance, his ability to get outside the pocket. And those would be real concerns of mine if I was going to select him.
All right, Mike T, you brought up something that was pretty interesting, and I want to give Dave Rothenberg some credit because he brought this up. I don't know if it was last week or the week before. He's been on top of this. So you mentioned maybe Jacksonville considering moving up and taking a quarterback. Now, you tell me, if you're the general manager of Jacksonville and you're trying to get up, would a deal to move up to four with the Giants and having Yannick Ngakoue involved in that deal, would that make sense to you in Jacksonville or no?
I think so. You know, if you see, if you're convicted about Tua, if you're convicted about Justin Herbert, to give up the ninth pick and a young pass rusher probably is what it would take, I think, to get up to go from nine to four. If you're the Giants and you could have a top 10 pick and a young pass rusher, that's a no-brainer. So I think they're just the other X factor. I think it's fun to speculate. You know, presumably we're talking about the Dolphins and Chargers as two teams in the top 10 that could be drafting quarterbacks. But if I'm Jacksonville, why wouldn't I consider moving up to get one of these guys? Again, if I was convicted in him, in one of those players. So I think, in my opinion, after those top three, Jordan Love is probably the next quarterback. But that, to me, is much more of a longer-term project. So unless you feel, if you're Jacksonville, that we could go win 10 or 11 games as we're currently constructed with Gardner Minshew, I would actually consider doing that.
Mike T, it feels like the backstop for the second quarterback off the board would be the fifth overall pick. So any team moving up would have to get into that top five. Do you anticipate that happening? Is that more likely than not?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that I see it the same way. Hard to think that the second quarterback gets past five, unless something really unusual happens. And, you know, that's always, you know, could be an X factor. You know, one X factor to me would be is, you know, does the owner, Martha Ford of the Detroit Lions, say, hey, look, you know, we can certainly use a corner like Jeff Okuda, and that's who Mel Kiper has the Lions taking. But you know what? I want to take the best quarterback here because Matt Stafford's been beaten up the last couple of years. So let's take the best quarterback we can get. No one's really talked about that, but if that happened, guys, I would be surprised, but I wouldn't be floored. So And that's, to me, like, what's so much fun about the draft. Like, when we're on the Tuesday after the draft, we'll talk about a half a dozen weird things that happened. And if I had to bet a dollar on what could be weird, it would be Detroit taking a quarterback.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So in Mel's mock that came out this morning, he has the Jets. I really love this. I'd like to know your take on it. He has the Jets going Wills out of Alabama and then Claypool out of Notre Dame. I would think that's a home run for the Jets. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. You know, one thing we got to remember about Wills, guys, is that he was the blindside protector for Tua, who's left-handed, right? So let's just keep in mind that Wills was the right tackle, not the left. I think he's tough. He's nasty. He's a good finisher, good athlete. He checks a lot of boxes. And if he was there at 11, I don't see why he wouldn't be a 10-year starter at tackle for the Jets. So I think that lines up well. Claypool, to me, is a little bit more of a rejection, just given the fact that his run after catch of ability, but certainly from a measurable standpoint, he's a very interesting prospect.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on the show. Mike T, I want your thoughts on the new deal that Christian McCaffrey signed.
Yeah, so shameless plug of the day. If you go to my Instagram or Twitter account, I did a 60-second blurb on that last night, so thank you for teeing up that question, Rick. In all seriousness, he's now $1 million over Zeke Elliott, where he should be. I think the running back market's so interesting. You got two really good players in a holding pattern in Kenyon Drake in Arizona, who's transitioned. You got Derrick Henry franchised in Tennessee. You got three really good running backs in Devontae Freeman, David Johnson, Todd Gurley, who all signed big extensions, who are no longer with the team they signed an extension for. You have Saquon Barkley, who's obviously a very interesting party in what's going on. And then, oh, by the way, beyond all that noise, guys, if we go back to the Super Bowl, the two starting running backs, Damian Williams of Kansas City and Raheem Mostert of San Francisco, were undrafted free agents. So I can certainly make the argument that McCaffrey was worth $16 million a year. But if you just look at what happened in the Super Bowl, boy, that running back market right now is really hard to understand.
Mike T, we spend a lot of time talking about the offensive players that are going to get drafted in the top 10. I mean, Mel Kiper in his latest mock has three quarterbacks going in the top 10. I know McShay in his last mock had four quarterbacks going in the top 10. Does it surprise you a little bit that Kiper in this mock has four defensive players in the top 10?
No, I think it's deserving. You know, and when you look at guys like Derrick Brown and Isaiah Simmons, certainly Okuda, they're no hole guys. Like, they're going to come in, they're going to play really well. Are they going to be an A minus, or a B plus? That's hard to say. But in this year, Chris, where there's so much uncertainty because of the weird pre-draft process, you know, I keep saying this, and I mean it. Like, this is the year you want to buy J&J stock. You want to buy Amazon stock. You it's hard to take a risk, guys. I've been there. You just, when you're in the first round like that and you don't know, take the guy that's a good player from a big school. Ask him to do the same thing he did in college, and more times than not, you're going to be happy with that player. And when we talk about guys like Simmons, Okuda, Derrick Brown, even Javon Kinlaw, like, it's hard to think they're not going to be, at a minimum, really good at the next level.
Mike, we talk all the time about guys that you really like, and we certainly know a lot of them. Of some of that you imagine is going to go top 15, maybe even extend it to the top 20, is there someone that's going to go in that range, top 20, that you just say, I just don't like him? I mean, I don't understand the fascination with him, and I'm not a fan of this guy?
Well, C.D. Lamb, I'll tell you what's interesting, and this is a little bit of a compliment at the same time, but when I saw him in person, I was floored at the way C.D. Lamb was built. Because, boy, he is good on tape, and he makes contested catches. He breaks tackles. But, you know, one of the big influences in my career, Dave, was Coach Parcells. And this time of year, all he would talk about is, hey, we want guys that are built to last, that are big, strong, physical, whatever their position may be. And I look at CeeDee Lamb, and, you know, there's a reason there's weight classes in boxing. Like, big men last longer than small men. And if I was taking a receiver, like the way Jerry Jeudy is built compared to CeeDee Lamb, or how strong and fast Ruggs is, I would have concerns that if I took Lamb, is he built for the rigors of the NFL?
Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on the show. Mike T, there's been some speculation as far as, you know, what the Steelers decide to do, you know, with Ben coming off the elbow. I mean, is it Jameis Winston as his backup? Do they draft a quarterback? Can you see any of these teams, maybe even Green Bay, you know, taking a chance in drafting someone like Jordan Love or drafting a quarterback in early on in this year's draft?
I think so, because if you get him at the right spot, and Green Bay is a great sort of example of that, Rick, is, you know, let him develop for a year or two. That's what Aaron Rodgers did, and, you know, that turned out to be a 10-15 year, you know, decision by Ted Thompson, the general manager at the time of Green Bay. I was at the Jets, and Rich Samini of ESPN New York just wrote about that 2000 draft. We at the time had two guys, Ray Lucas and Vinny Testaverde, that we both liked. Chad Pennington comes in, and look how successful he was. So Jordan Love at the right point makes a ton of sense to me. You know, that's what coaching is. That's what development is. Get him in your building, get him in your program. I mean, it could be a team like Atlanta. There's a number of teams that really, in my opinion, you get him, you're happy he's there, and then when he's ready to play, you know, there's not as much pressure on the player or the team.
Mike T, switching gears a little bit. I mean, Dak Prescott had that video over the weekend come out where he had 30 people at a party at his house. He violated the ordinance down there in Prosper, Texas, to limit gatherings to 10 people or less. If you're looking at Dak Prescott and you're evaluating his decision-making and whether or not to make him the highest-paid player in football, does what happened this past weekend factor into your decision at all?
I don't think so. I think if there was, like, a lot of patterns of behavior along those lines, I would certainly be concerned. But he's really been exemplary, and he's young, and he's productive. You know, the two biggest numbers I need to know is his age, 26, the number of wins as a starter, 40. And that's a good problem to have if my quarterback's having, you know, too many people. And I don't mean to make light of social distancing, because it is critically important for all of us in society today. But if that's the worst thing he ever did, those are good problems to have.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. I don't know if you have a big board like some of the draft experts do, Mike, but give us the top couple of guys that you would have on your big board. Is Chase Young number one on yours?
Yeah, it's hard not to say that Chase Young is going to be successful. I remember being at their practice last summer, Dave, and he walked by me. I'm like, oh, boy, you know, how do I get him on my team? Mm-hmm. He looks the part. The other guy for me that was really high up there, given how pro football is played today, is Isaiah Simmons, because we talk a lot about the positionless player on offense, Tyreek Hill, Deebo Samuel, guys that can line up, and they're just great weapons, even to a certain extent, Christian McCaffrey. I think that's what Isaiah Simmons is as it relates to the, you know, positionless defensive player. And if I could have a guy that could go walk out and cover those guys man-to-man outside the numbers on the perimeter, then you could walk him into the box and have him blitz or play the run. I don't see any holes. The guy has great character. I love him. And I just know working with creative defensive coaches like Eric Mangini, Rex Ryan, they would have so much fun with him, where every Wednesday he would come in for that week's game planning, and it's going to look totally different. And I think you could really put a lot of pressure on an opposing offense trying to account for, you know, where Isaiah Simmons is each week.
All right, Mike T, potentially my last question, because you are so interesting. Give me your feel on if you believe Bill Belichick when he says he's all good with Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer as his quarterbacks headed into the season.
You know what's interesting to me, guys, and shame on me, because I should have paid more attention to this last year when it first happened, but I think this is a very underrated aspect of what happened, which is last August, the Patriots cut Brian Hoyer, and Tom Brady's backup was Jarrett Stidham, a fourth-round pick out of Auburn. So if they had real consternation about Stidham, they would have held on to Hoyer. Hoyer's your ultimate insurance blanket policy, you know, security blanket. So I think there's really something there, and that transaction tells me everything I need to know about what Coach Belichick really believes about Stidham.
Mike T, this is my last question. Anthony Lynn, the head coach of the Chargers, has been posturing, saying that Tyrod Taylor is their guy, and it's not just for this year. He could see that for the foreseeable future. Let me ask you this. Are the Chargers going to draft a quarterback this year? Because when I look at Tom Telesco's resume, and I look at the fact that this team has been outside looking in on the playoffs four of the last 5 years, a losing record in three of the last 5 years, it feels like they have to have some urgency about getting that thing turned around. And a good place to start is being able to have a quarterback. So how surprised would you be if the Chargers didn't come away from night one of the draft with a quarterback?
I think both those things can be true. I think Coach Lynn, and I had a chance to work with him at the Jets, And I think they really do like Tyrod Taylor. Him and Rex go back all the way to their Buffalo Bills days with him. He's probably a better player than he gets credit for. So I think they can win with him, and I do think they'll take a quarterback. So I actually think both statements can be true.
Go ahead, Rick. I know you have at least one, if not more, questions. So I don't want to stand in the way of that.
Well, I said potentially, yeah. I do have one more question. I appreciate that, Dave. All right, this is officially my last question. Mike T, just kind of more of a macro view of the NFL right now, and put into consider, you know, what's going to happen with the virtual OTAs. Who knows when training camp is going to start? Like all that baked in. I mean, is there a team that when you take what they've done so far in the offseason, that you look at and say, okay, this is a team that maybe was on the outside looking in that you expect to take a step into being a playoff team this upcoming season?
Yeah, well, I would just say, generally speaking, you know, you look at every team that has a new quarterback outside of Tampa Bay and Tom Brady and Marcus Mariota with the Raiders, every quarterback that signed knew somebody on their staff. So I think the Colts could be a team that fits that bill from a standpoint that Coach Reich had Phillip Rivers before. So to the extent that you pair a really good offensive line, a young emerging defense, I think Rivers, if healthy, if protected well, I think the Colts could be significantly improved.
Mike T, I lied. I got one more question. I'm going to pull a Rick on this one. Cam Newton doesn't feel like he's going to have an opportunity to be a starting quarterback week one of this season. In your opinion, what's the best landing spot for Cam?
You know, that's interesting. I think it's a situation, could be maybe Denver, where you have an incumbent, a young player like Drew Locke, that's, let's face it, not completely solidified that position. That could be a place to look at. And, you know, beyond that, I would maybe be a little bit of a wait-and-see mode. Maybe it's Jacksonville, depending on what happens in the draft. But he should be in a situation at a minimum to me, which was a lot like Ryan Tannehill last year, where he goes through a situation where the starter wasn't, you know, firmly established for whatever reason, and he has a chance to play at some point this season.
All right, Mike, I believe that we've exhausted our questions. We're going to let you run. We will talk to you next Tuesday, just 2 days before the draft. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we will talk to you in a week from now.
Great, guys. Look forward to it. Thank you.
All right, good stuff. That, of course, is the sensational Mike Tannenbaum, who joins us every single Tuesday. Football season, non-football season, makes absolutely no difference.
Do you need to feel better about your life?
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
And totally redeem yourself!
Let's take a look at Rick's Knobservation.
Welcome back, dum-dum.
All right, here we go, fellas. We'll start with a good story, as we've been doing here.
No.
The Detroit Pistons owner, good on him, announced Monday that he has purchased 100,000 personal protective masks that will be donated to city police officers, firefighters, bus drivers, and other city employees working with the public. So good on him. 100,000 masks.
That's great. Yeah, that's awesome.
It's really
I love
whatever
these stories.
You can do. Yeah,
with
you
so
can
many
do.
Of these awful stories going on, anytime we have a chance to have one of these good ones, let's make sure to bring it to the forefront.
Well, since you said that, Dave, I want to also throw this one out there. There's not a lot of positive that you can associate with the Cleveland Browns, but they're supposed to release their new uniforms tomorrow, and they've already said that all the proceeds from their new uniforms are going to go toward COVID-19 relief efforts. So good on the Cleveland Browns for doing that.
Yeah, it's great. And anybody and all that are doing stuff like that, we got to bring attention to it.
All right, here we go. Quick show of hands. Who could guess which state has deemed the WWE essential business?
Florida.
It could only be.
Florida.
It could only be. You don't have to, you know, give us the question. You could give us all 50 states as an option. It could only be Florida.
It is, in fact, Florida, which is interesting, too, now. But I mean, if the WWE is essential business, I mean, that would lead you to believe that, I mean, as long as there's no one, you know, no one watching the events, that would open the door for Major League Baseball, the NBA, and the NHL in Florida.
Of course. College football, all of it, right?
Yeah.
If the WWE is essential, how are all the other sports not essential? They have to be.
Yeah, they would be. But, I mean, it'd be interesting to see what happens now. I mean, that would be a viable place I know that ice would be an issue, but I mean, with how it's set up, where the rink is located, you know, the amount of hotels that are in walking distance to the rink, mm-hmm. Tampa would be an interesting option for the NHL.
Yeah,
I mean, you're talking about, I mean, it's a 3-minute walk from the hotel, multiple right. hotels to the arena.
And just to house all of the games down there?
I don't think, I wouldn't say all of the games, but you could take, I mean, you could take the Eastern Conference.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going straight to the playoffs, you could take the Eastern Conference, play 2 games a day, you know?
You could. What I don't understand is, and I'm not complaining, I mean, I love sports, but how is WWE considered as essential?
Well, they've decided that it's essential because people need to see it. Like, you're talking about if it's not affecting the physical health of the people participating or anyone, you know, anyone around the event, then you're talking about the mental health of people that need to, you know, need something to watch.
Listen, I'm all for it coming back. I still don't.
No, but that would be the argument. If you're not putting anyone at risk because you're taking the proper precautions, you have no one, you know, you have no spectators, all the wrestlers are being tested and everyone is tested negative, so you're not putting their well-being in jeopardy. You're providing a service for people that are, you know, stuck at home. I guess that would be the argument, and it's the mental well-being.
I guess.
Oh, that's what you hope, though, isn't it?
I mean, if you're looking for these other leagues. It doesn't make sense to me. I'm thrilled that if it comes back. I am. I know people love wrestling, and I'm all for things coming back. I do not understand how that is essential.
Well, but you better wrap your head around it, because that's the only, I mean, that's going to be the argument that you need to make for any of these leagues that want to start up.
Yeah, but I think you have to absolutely have the approval of public health officials, and I don't know that you're going to get that from the federal level. Now, maybe the people that they're leaning on locally as a resource say that it's okay, but to me, you can't make this type of decision in a bubble. You know what I mean? Because you're going to affect people in the region. And I just think that that's one of those things that's a little bit borderline, seeing as how where we're at right now with this pandemic.
No, but you said it. You're going to need, this is not going to be you just to make a decision. Like the NBA, the NHL just said, hey, this is what we're going to do. No, you're going to have, you'll approach whatever it is, whatever state it is, with your plan. And they'll either help you or they'll say, we're not doing it. So, I mean, if this, you know, fingers crossed works out for, you know, Florida making the decision that, you know, the WWE can have live shows, and no one, you know, comes down with COVID-19, no one gets sick, and this thing goes off, you know, fairly well.
Right.
Then that's a good thing for the other leagues.
Yeah, and does it mean that maybe baseball's not too far behind, right? If we use WWE as kind of the guinea pig here for sports to get back into being played.
Yeah, because the last thing you would want is that all of a sudden, I mean, it seems ridiculous when you even say it, that, I mean, the WWE is essential business. And it is kind of ridiculous. But the last thing you would, I mean, would want to have happen is Florida lets this happen and something goes wrong. And now they have egg on their face and they're embarrassed. So now what state's going to go out on a limb and give you the ability to restart your league?
You almost can't.
Exactly right.
So whether you like wrestling or not, you better root for it right now.
You better root for it.
Yep.
Here we go, because we got to get into the story that I didn't want to get into yesterday because I didn't feel like we had enough time, because it's a serious story. So just quickly, did this happen in Florida? I mean, this is a terrible story. So apparently a man thought it was a good idea to call orders into New Jersey. He ordered thousands of dollars worth of phony pizza, claiming that the food was going to be donated to the police, authorities said. Man who did the ordering never paid or picked up any of the orders that he placed.
Ugh.
Never. Didn't pick them up. On several occasions when the restaurants called back the number where the order was being made, the man who made the order bizarrely said that he wished Italians would get infected with coronavirus.
Oh my God. So he actually gave his number?
Well, yeah, no, they called back the number. Yeah, they called back. No one said he was smart. They called back the number that he was using and said, you know, where are you to pick up these pizzas? And he said, you know, he just said that he was hoping that Italians would be infected with the coronavirus.
Oh, God.
It's a terrible person.
Terrible person.
Who even thinks awful of this person. Kind of stuff?
And oh, by the way, this guy, I mean, this is just icing on the cake here. The man who made these orders was actually on probation for selling fake Disney World tickets.
Oh, God, he's the devil.
I mean, this guy's the worst.
I mean, it's the happiest place on earth that he's selling fake tickets.
This guy's the worst. Disney? That is the worst.
But is there a big black market for tickets to Disney?
I mean, have you ever been? I guess so.
Yeah, but you could just walk up and buy tickets, no?
Well, yeah, but he's probably selling cheaper tickets,
right,
I guess.
Right, right. Like half-price tickets. Half-price
tickets.
You're right.
You know?
Yeah, he's ingenious, if nothing else.
Yeah, a little bit evil. My first evils. I mean, that's an understatement. Did that happen? Is this guy in Florida?
I'm going to say, the guy was in Florida.
Well, hang on a second. Let me have a line of question here. I thought said this was in Jersey.
No. He was calling this man. We don't know where
he was. So this man is calling pizza places in Jersey.
In New Jersey.
But we're unsure where he's calling from?
Exactly right. Exactly right. He is making fake calls to
pizzerias.
So
there's a chance that this guy's sitting in a condo in Boca, calling like Livingston, New Jersey, ordering fake pizzas.
Exactly.
I'll say
right.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll say yes. That's exactly what I'm
saying. Exactly. Exactly, Dave.
So you say Florida or not Florida?
I'll say Florida.
Santiago, Florida or not Florida?
I feel like it has to be Florida to be diabolical, but the New Jersey thing really throws me off. I'll say not.
You would be wrong. That is in Florida. That man is actually in Florida.
Yes.
Yes. Well, awful. He's a lot of effort. Yeah, he was in Orlando. He's believed to be in Orlando making calls to
pizzerias. You know what? You said selling tickets to Disney should have given us a little hint as well.
Very fair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, who knows? I mean, the guy's ordering pizzas in New Jersey, and he's in a different state. I mean, he's just diabolical. It's ridiculous.
He really is.
All right, speaking of knobs, I mean, it's only Tuesday, and between what was available for knobs yesterday and what's going to happen the rest of the week, I would say he is officially going to be the knob of maybe the month. Maybe, nah, we'll say month. Who knows how this year is going to end up. Kyle Larson, Chris brought this up yesterday.
Yes.
NASCAR driver I didn't want to comment. I didn't want to do it until I actually heard firsthand him say it. So yesterday he was reprimanded for using a racial slur during one of these I races. Didn't realize he lost the audio between him and his spotter and didn't realize that, what he was saying was still being broadcast. And he used the N word, of course, because why wouldn't you? What an idiot. So he's lost all but one sponsor. And today, to everyone's, I know I'm happy about it. And Chris, I'm sure you feel the same way. He was fired by his racing team.
Yeah, I mean, the guy deserved it. I mean, Rick.
Of course he did.
Yeah, I mean, he's on this virtual racing thing, which NASCAR is trying to promote just because they've had to cancel a lot of their major events. I mean, he's supposed to be on this vehicle where he's competing against other drivers. And the thought is that other racing fans can actually listen in on the conversation, the back and forth between the drivers. And he would make a comment like that where everybody could hear him. Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, but what's so upsetting to me is just that would even be a thought that went through his head. Like, whatever, I don't understand the iRacing, but I guess they're competing in something online, right?
Yeah.
And he becomes frustrated. Fine. Normal.
It wasn't. I mean, it wasn't even that. If you want to say frustrated, I mean, it was. I don't even know if you want to. I wouldn't even say it was.
Well,
he
lost communication, right? That's what happened.
He lost communication, and then he blurted out the word.
Right, but
what I don't
understand is how you could go from being angry to using, racial epithet. Like, it doesn't add. If I was angry, the last thing I would do is just start to use racial slurs.
Yeah, but time out. What I'm trying to explain to you is when you listen to it, when you hear it, which makes what he said awful, but for me, the apology even worse. When he goes out, a word that should never be said. When you hear him say it, this was a word that that he used on a regular basis.
Yeah, he was real comfortable.
Like, this is part of his vocabulary.
Yeah,
like it wasn't something that he just like lost his mind and said
it's
in frustration. Like this is,
of course,
this is a word that he uses on a regular basis.
Right. There's no way that anyone could convince me that all of a sudden this guy, for the first time ever, was frustrated with lack of communication to whoever he's trying to talk to, and then he just blurts out racial slurs. There's just
no. You know what it's like?
No way.
You know what?
You know what? I want to even go beyond calling it a racial slur. At that point, at this point, it's hate speech.
Yeah.
Like if you use that term, that is hate speech, and there is no place for it in the landscape of sports. There's no place for it in our society, period. But I'm not naive as to think that other people don't use it. My only thing is this: if you have the kind of platform that Kyle Larson has, and you use something like that in a public forum, you deserve to lose your sponsorships. You deserve to lose the opportunity to do that job. You do.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even a question. And I thought his apology was ridiculous.
It was very.
I mean,
weak.
It was no. It was so weak and was so phony. I mean, it was, dude. Like the fact that he was fired from his racing team was, I mean, couldn't have been more well deserved for being as stupid and saying what he said. Ridiculous.
Yep. It was justice. It was.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.